Okay, my name is Russell Spatz. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Russell.
I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's great to be here. I really enjoy and appreciate the privilege and opportunity to share with people a little bit about my experience in this situation. Now, you all understand this is just my experience and my opinions. I'm kind of opinionated. You know, it's sort of gotten better and worse with time. I came in here and I thought I knew it all, and you know, after 31 years in this deal, you know, my sobriety date's January 25th, 1981. I've lost so many old ideas that I've become stupid in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what happens to you. You walk in really bright, and we used to have a saying in Alcoholics Anonymous: you walk in unemployable, and 3 months later, you're underpaid. Maybe they still have it, but yeah, 3 months later you're ready to fire everybody and, you know, take charge. But I came in, a week before I came in I knew everything, and of course now after 31 years I don't know much, and which is better that way. You'd be surprised how much easier it is and more pleasant to go through life without having a thought in your head. And I can't be too bright because I have all these sponsees that come up to me with these incredibly difficult problems, and they bounce them off me, and I give them an answer, and they tell me I don't understand. So I can't be too bright. So that's the deal. So I'm going to share a little bit of that step 11. I always try to, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do it or anything like that. You know, it says in the big book, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories, in our stories and testimony, describe in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. So, you know, I'm a student of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a student of the, which is our basic text. I'm a student of the 12 and 12. I've been studying it for 31 years. I'm a student of all the literature in AA, you know, including Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timer. And obviously I've been to thousands of meetings and sponsored hundreds of men, and I've watched. It's not a theory with me. You know, alcoholics like to sit around bar rooms and drink and tell people their opinions and their theories on how to run the world. This isn't a theory of with my theory. I've lived this thing. You know what I mean? I've worked with alcoholics. I've watched them fall. I've watched them succeed. You know, I've watched how this disease plays out over time. You know, everybody has a lot of bright ideas, feelings, chips on their shoulders, animosities, things that they think will work, which may work for 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or even 10 or 15 years. You'd be surprised how long an alcoholic can stay sober, just making believe that this is all about not drinking and not about God. But you see, if you hang around here long enough, you actually see what happens to somebody who doesn't progress spiritually after 20 years and after 25 years. You see what that looks like. You know, so you get sort of like a different perspective on things. You see it in the long run. You know, Bill Wilson said, in talking about the next frontier, emotional sobriety, not physical sobriety. You know, you got a lot of guys physically sober, you know, but not emotionally sober. You know, they say the six steps separating the men from the boys. And of course, he said the real problem, what Bill Wilson said the real problem was something called unhealthy dependencies. And sometimes we don't even know we're dependent. We have these dependencies. All we know is that we worry a lot about money. We worry about a lot about sex. We worry a lot about whether we're accepted. We worry a lot about women if you're a man. We worry a lot about men if you're a woman. We worry a lot about romance and partnership and husbands and wives and family. We worry a lot about a lot of stuff, don't we? A lot of stuff, right? We got a book that says, you know, job or no job, wife or no wife, let no man say that he's got to have his wife back, his car back, and all you need is a relationship with God. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. When we sincerely took such a position, the position of we stopped playing God, the decision for God, we sincerely took it, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his works well. You know, we read all that stuff and we see there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. Don't even try to manage your life, because the one thing that we're convinced about is we cannot manage our own lives, and no human power can relieve their alcoholism, but God could and would if he was sought. it says that our biggest problem is that besides being having a chief characteristic of defiance, that we're selfish, that we're self-centered, that we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, that we step on people's toes, they retaliate, seemingly we didn't do anything, but we later find out that all sorts of decisions we made based on self-centeredness has put us in a position to be hurt. And an alcoholic, if you're in here, you know, yourself, you're an example of somebody whose self will run riot, but we usually don't think so. So if you don't think so, that's proof positive that you are an alcoholic. You know what I mean? It says above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it will kill us. And we don't even know we have it. The thing we don't even believe we have is going to kill us. And it says God makes that possible, and we don't want to talk about him. You know what I mean? And that's all. That's not even my opinion. That's not even my opinion. I haven't even gotten to my opinion yet. That's just quotes from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, our basic text. So I don't know what fellowship you're in, but if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's our basic text. Whether you like it or not, that's the truth. That's what you buy into. All that stuff. You know, so I come in here, and after reading all this stuff and watching it all work, you can imagine I've developed certain opinions. Now, of course, you're alcoholics, which means you're free to ignore everything I say, which you probably will. Or not, or you can pick one thing out or two things out or whatever it is. But I want you to know that whatever I'm sharing with you tonight, 31 years ago, I didn't believe any of it. And I didn't even know any of it. So I want you to know that if you're in a position which you think where you think this is all a bunch of crap, and you don't buy into any of it, and you don't understand most of it, and it all runs counter to your way of thinking, I want you to understand that 31 years ago I felt the same exact way. So I am a product of mean and repressive sponsors and older members of Alcoholics Anonymous that didn't respect me and didn't realize how brilliant I was, and a lot of bad breaks and misunderstandings. But all I did in here is I just didn't want to drink anymore. I kept on going to meetings and read that book. And so everything I've got in my head now is not original. It was fed to me by other people, and it helped me survive in such a way so that I'm, as they say today, happy, joyous, and free. Joy of living. What does it say? It says, we have experienced much of heaven. We've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we... Hey, listen, there's a lot of people here to help you out not to drink. But, you know, whether or not they're going to help you to experience much of heaven and be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I mean, what good does it do not to drink if you're not happy with your sobriety? You know, in the big book it says, every now and again, somebody says, I don't drink, I don't miss it at all, feel better, look better. He says, we laugh at such Sally. We laugh at that. We know he's going to try the all game again because he's like a boy that was in the graveyard because he's not happy with his sobriety. Presently, he will try the all game again because he's not happy. Then he'll know the horsemen, you know, bewilderment, terrorment, whatever that stuff is. The three, four horsemen. Oh, there are four of them, three of them. There's a lot of them suckers. Whatever it is, it's bad. They get you to the jumping off place, right? That jumping off place. Hey, if you haven't been to the jumping off place, I was there. The jumping off place, you know, where you know loneliness is, you do. If you haven't been there, you really need to go. Really, I hate to see people miss that place. What a place. What a place to be. You know, when you get to the jumping off place, it helps you with the arguing crap. It does. You know, you argue less at the jumping off place, you know. But some people have to get to that jumping off place because they're, you know, they're like me, they're recovering smart asses. Recovering know-it-alls. They think they know more than anybody else. You know, they're not, so they really need to get to that jumping off place. That's the place they need to be. In any event, so when I get up here and I start doing this stuff, and I've been doing it for a long time, what I like to share really is a little bit of my experience. And to the extent it helps you, you know, A is like a giant toolbox, right? There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and you know, I may not help you, and I may help somebody else, or, you know, somebody else may help you. Just keep coming back until you find your person, your we. It says, what does it say? It says, if you want what we have, if you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So before you even take the steps, there's a step before the steps, that you got to want what we have. You've got to find your we, your group of people or person that you say, gee, I'd like to be like that guy. I'd like to have what he has, even though I don't even understand it. if you've got that deal going on, then you're ready to take certain steps. Because if you don't find somebody you want what they have in here, you're just sort of like being a dilettante. You're sort of like walking around trying to figure out things, which is okay for a while. But at some point in time, you got to latch on to a sponsor or somebody where you say, I want to follow that guy. Which you have to understand is counter to most alcoholics who want to do everything by themselves and, you know, basically take the attitude, don't you tell me what to do. Who the hell do you think you are? Don't you be telling me what to do. You're no better than me, because, you know, most alcoholics walk in here and they feel like pieces of crap. I mean, don't listen to them when they say, I'm the greatest, I'm the best, I don't care what people think about me. We all know basically what alcoholics are about. All they do is think about themselves and other people. Because people that really have a good self-image of themselves don't walk around saying, I don't give a crap what other people think about me. They say things like, pass the salt, you know, give me the ketchup. You know, they don't say that stuff. The only people who say, I don't give a crap what they think about me are people that think all the time, you know, why did he say that? What is he doing? What does he think about me? Why did I say that? What does it sound like? You're always filtering yourself. You're always trying to belong. That's why we drank. That's why we were scared of people. You know, I used to say, well, I love people. I'm not scared of people. I used to hang out with people in bars. Well, why did you always have to get drunk when you were around people? Why did you always have to drink? Because they made you uncomfortable. Because you're worried about whether you'd be accepted or not. That's the magic thing about alcohol. You know, you drink it. Instead of worrying about joining the group, you feel like you own the group. You know, it's the greatest stuff in the world. And so, you know, what I want to talk about tonight is a little bit about the 11th step and what it means to me today at 31 years. And I'll try to take you through it a little, and, you know, whatever rubs off on you doesn't. Now, I want to tell you something. I have been known, you know, it's just the way it is, to sometimes say things that piss people off, which is a good thing. Because, you know, it's been my experience that if you're not saying things that are pissing alcoholics not off, if you're not saying something that isn't pissing off some alcoholics, you're probably not saying much. You understand what I'm saying? You're probably not teaching much. You're probably not hearing much. You're probably not saying much that's worthwhile. One of the things I've realized about this disease I have, it's a disease that does not like to be confronted. It doesn't like to be confronted. It doesn't like to be told what to do. It doesn't like to get it. It doesn't like to be disagreed with. And it wants to get its own way, and it's a spoiled brat. You know, that's the bottom line. That's what this disease, and I find it for myself, oftentimes, helpful to think of it as like a person, like an entity. You know what I mean? You know, in other words, like this disease wants to kill me. Like it's a person wanting, it wants me sick. It wants me hanging around with the wrong people. When I'm with a group and somebody's talking the truth, it wants me to put that person down. It wants me to be cynical. You know what I mean? It doesn't want me well. It wants to steer me away from the wellness. It doesn't want me to hear the good stuff. It wants me to stay exactly where I am, sick. You know, that's the way it wants me. And I've got to battle that deal and understand that that deal's not out there. It's inside me. You know, I was told a long time ago, the man you'll be 5 years from now and the woman you'll be will be greatly dependent upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And don't kid yourself, the books you read are going to be dependent upon who you hang out with. And the truth of the matter is I decide who I'm going to hang out with. Because the people you hang out with is going to determine the conversations you have. And whatever conversations you're having with the people you hang out with, and God forbid if you hang out only with yourself, but the people you hang out with is going to determine the conversations you have. And trust me, whatever you're conversing with them about is the same conversation you're going to be having with yourself as you drive away in the car for the rest of the day until you get to the next meeting. It's what your focus is going to be. And we have a book called Alcoholics Anonymous that says that only God's going to help you. He's the one who has all the power. And it says, the great fact is this and nothing less. And nothing less, which I believe means there's nothing less than this. This is the great fact. That the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator lives in our hearts and our minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has done for us what we cannot do for ourselves. That's what it says in the promises. You know, He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. We lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we're reborn. And that's the central fact. That's what they said the central fact was in their lives. And ultimately, and you may not get it the first day or the first week or the first year or the first 10 years or the first 15 years. And more than likely, if you're anything like me, you're not going to understand it, you're going to fight it, and you're not going to like it. But if you stay around here for 25, 30 years and you find yourself being joyous, happy, and free and feeling good about yourselves and living an incredible life that you never thought you'd live, you'll find that you might be actually talking like me. Not because you're talking like me, you might find that all of a sudden your life has somehow, in some way, by doing these steps, developed in such a way so that you're thinking the same thoughts I'm thinking and talking just like I'm talking. Have I been brainwashed? Absolutely. Did my brain need washing? Absolutely. You know, I used to say, because I suffer from alcoholism. I don't suffer from alcohol consumption anymore. I haven't suffered from alcohol consumption in, you know, like 31 years. Because I learned that, just like it says in the big book, my problem is not drinking alcohol. My problem has not been drinking alcohol for 31 years. Because if you have alcoholism, it's not about drinking alcohol. Well, yes, ultimately, we drink alcohol because that's the symptom. Alcohol is the symptom of the disease, just like sneezing is the symptom of a cold. If you're an alcoholic, you drink. You drink because you hate sobriety. That's why alcoholics drink. Alcoholics drink because they can't stand living on the planet Earth sober. Now, some people need a reason to drink, right? My reason was I was awake. Awake was good enough for me. If I was happy, I was drinking. If I was sad, I was drinking. If I was alone, I was drinking. If I was people, I was drinking. You know, there was always something to drink over, whether it be boredom, or they can't do this to me, or who do they think they are, or they don't know who they're screwing with, or I'm on top of the world, I'm the king now, and, you know, the same mind that measures himself, I'm a winner, is the same mind that 6 hours later is comparing my inside with somebody else's outside and saying I'm a loser. You know, my mind was always comparing how I felt with how other people looked, comparing myself with society, looking at the billboards, looking at the stuff going out there, and somehow it ultimately, no matter how far I got, no matter how much money I had, ultimately came to the decision that I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I was never going to be anything but a nothing. I used to put something in my body that turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. You know, and that's why I drank. I drank because no woman, no amount of clothes, no money, no haircut, no loss of weight, no nothing ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. So I drank, and I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have it do for them what it did for me and stop. You're just not going to do it because that's how good it worked. And the sad part about my life is alcohol stopped working for me. And the saddest part about my life is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And what ultimately and of course, if you're a drinker and you ultimately become addicted to the booze and you use the booze every day, your life starts falling apart and they start arresting you for things like driving while intoxicated. So since they start pointing fingers at you and arresting you for driving while intoxicated and you lose your job because you're intoxicated, you start thinking the problem is booze because it sure looks like booze. You're living in a bottle. But the truth of the matter is I drank because I hated being sober. That's what it says. Men and women like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That describes us sober. Because when you're selfish and you're self-centered and you feel crappy about yourself, you're in a constant state of fear and worry. You know, I used to say the same thing. I'd say, well, I'm not scared of anything. I'm just worried a lot. You know what I mean? You know, we just don't even understand that. Listen, worry is fear. If you ever worried about, that's fear. You know, sometimes it feels like anger. Sometimes it feels like depression. It's all fear. And sure, you can stop the drinking. How do you stop the thinking? You ever try to stop the thinking? So you run around and you know, you look for sex or look for romance or look for money or look for anything to distract you from how horrible it is just sitting there being alone by yourself with your thoughts. And that's where alcoholism is. You know, I drank alcohol so I wouldn't have to experience alcoholism. That's what alcohol. Alcohol was the greatest drug in the world to stop you from experiencing alcoholism. And you really want to experience alcoholism, what you got to do is stop drinking. You stop drinking and those voices in the head start going, you're an idiot, you're stupid, you're a nobody. You know, or you start putting down other people in your head, you know. And I used to have all sorts of bad, I couldn't stand silence. Alcoholics can't stand silence. They hate sitting alone in silence, because when I was silent, I had to have the radio on, the TV on, because when I was silent, when there was silence going on, there was nothing but bad thoughts in my mind about other people and myself, and it made me uncomfortable. And so I had to be on the phone, listen to the radio, watch the TV, do something in order to avoid just being here with me, because me wasn't good enough, it was insufficient. And that's why I drank. And that's what real alcoholism is all about, what happens to you when you're sober. That's why our parents and everybody don't understand. They say, why are you going to those meetings? And you say, well, because I'm an alcoholic. He says, but you haven't drank in 5 years. He says, I know, but I suffer from alcoholism. What's that all about? I'm just weird. You know, I can't live on the planet. You know, that's my problem. I go to these meetings, I feel better. It helps to get through it gets through the rest of the day while living with crazy people like you, you know. I just can't stand, and that's what this thing is all about. It's about having a transformation so that you get to the point where not only do you live without drinking, you know, you hear have a lot of people in AA that are sort of hanging in there. That's pretty good, you know. How would you like, you know, I sponsor a lot of guys that have 20, 25 years. And, you know, when you got 20, 25 years, you've pretty much been around in AA, you know how to talk and everything. You would know that, but, you know, I talk to them, and they're miserable. Or at least they're not as happy as they could be. They're not experiencing the kind of joy that they could be experiencing. And, you know, to hang around this thing for 15, 20 years just so you could say, I'm hanging in there one day at a time. I'll tell you what, I mean, I guess it's better than drinking, but not much. You know, it's a tough thing to do. You want to experience what these people experienced. You know, the joy of living. That's the theme of the 12 steps. So one of the things that I like to talk about, which I think is important to share, is my own personal experience, which may piss you off. I'm going to talk about it anyway. Because what happens is when people hear me talk about, when they hear you talk about personal experiences from the podium, what they think you're saying is, you better do it this way. And I'm not saying that to you. You don't have to do it this way at all. You know, I don't want to impose my deal on anybody. Now, don't get me wrong. I got guys that ask me to sponsor them, and they'll ask my opinion, and I'll tell them what I think they ought to do. But I don't sponsor any of you guys. You know what I mean? I mean, there may be some of my sponsees out there, but I'm just sharing with you my experience. Because it's our stories that disclose in a general way what we use. Like, our testimony is important. So I want to, but before I start, I want to warn you about a couple of things. You know, I was sitting in a room once when I had about 3 months sober. I was sitting in a room right before a meeting started with my sponsor and two other guys. And, you know, what happens with this disease of alcoholism, if somebody gets drunk all the time, you can tell he's an alcoholic, you can see he's an alcoholic, there's evidence he's an alcoholic. That's alcoholism. Can't stop drinking, right? But there are things that we do and thoughts that we have and stuff that happens with alcoholics that is just as telling as alcoholism, but you just don't smell the booze. You know, man, I'll tell you something. I have met many, many guys in my life where I just shake their hand and I hear one word and I just know. I said, that guy's an alcoholic. Man, you just give me one guy who says they can't do that crap to me. You know what I mean? Who do they think? They don't know who they're screwing with. I say, man, that guy's a drinker. You know what I mean? I got an alky on my hands, you know? We just talk and we act and we think a certain way. And you know, it's so evident. And we just sort of give out vibes. I don't know what it is. And I was sitting in an A room just like this right before a meeting, and my sponsor was there. And one of the things I did, which I didn't know was a sign of alcoholism, is I did what I've been doing for the last 15 years. I was a bar drinker. I used to drink in bars. Anybody here used to drink in bars? So when you drink in bars, there's not much to do except drink and talk. And what do you talk about if you're an alcoholic in bars? Well, you talk about other people behind their back. So what do you say about other people behind their back? Oh, he's a nice guy. Oh, isn't he a good guy? No. You talk crap about other people behind. You talk bad things. You assassinate the character. You assassinate the character of other. What about the guy? Oh, yeah, what a jerk. You know what I mean? You just, because it's so true and it's so good. You see, because what I didn't really understand. See, when you're an alcoholic, you tell yourself lies. You say, this is what you do because it makes you feel better. You say things like this. You know you're a piece of crap. So what you do is you tell yourself you're better than everybody else. You understand how that works? You know deep inside you're a piece of crap. Everything in this world tells you you're a piece of crap. Every time somebody talks to you, you feel like they're talking down to you. You want to fight them. You want to argue with them because you feel like a piece of crap. You know, you got to control everybody because you're scared. Because if you're not in control, something bad's going to happen because you don't trust anybody. And that's how you are when you're an alcoholic. But to make yourself feel better, you tell yourself you're better than everybody, you know, and you're just sort of like some sort of special person. You understand? That's what you tell yourself. And what happens is you don't really think about this. You don't think about this. You don't comprehend what you're doing. I mean, you don't comprehend this unless you got like 20 years of sobriety and you've been thinking about this stuff. But what you ultimately fall into is you find, if you're an alcoholic, that you feel bad about yourself, you feel crappy about yourself. But if you can talk badly about other people behind their back, it makes you feel good. That's why you do it. You talk bad about other people behind their back because somehow it makes you feel good. And what happens is we hang around other guys just like us, and we have like a little game we play. It's like a little dance. I talk crap about somebody behind their back, and then what happens is Danny says, "Man, are you right? Your wife is a bitch," or something, or "he is a jerk," or something like that. And if I can get Danny to agree with me, which he readily will, because he's part of the alcoholic compact, then as soon as he agrees with me that so-and-so's a bitch, I feel better about myself. It's sort of like a perverse sort of group therapy. Some of which is practiced in here, believe it or not. You know what I mean? And then what happens is then it's Danny's turn to talk shit about somebody he knows. And then I get to agree with him. "Hey, man, you're so right." And then he feels better about himself, because people who feel crappy about themselves, what they do is they talk crap about other people behind their back. And it's just as much of a symptom of alcohol as anything else, except they don't arrest you for driving while talking crappy behind other people's back. You know, they don't arrest you for driving while coveting, driving while greedy, driving while lusting. They just arrest you for the alcohol stuff. So you don't even realize that these thoughts and these feelings and these attitudes that are with you 24/7 all the time, that you don't even think are strange or weird or wrong, because it's just the way you think all your life from the age 4 on. It's just you. It's just your person. I used to say my sponsor, "This is my personality." He'd say, "Well, your personality's killing you." So it's just you. And you know what it says in the big book? It says, "Our alcoholic seems the only normal life." It seems normally you. And you don't realize that it's you, sober, that's out to kill you. And it's those thoughts that's why it says, "Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the center point of these men's lives, are shifted off to the side, and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, attitudes, and emotions." And that's why people that have been around here a long time actually think completely differently than people that first come in. We're all alcoholics, but you find that people that first come in are jittery, they're mad, they're upsettable, they got all these problems and everything like that, all these difficulties, they're sensitive. I used to say to my sponsor, "I'm sensitive." He says, "You're not sensitive, you're touchy." Great artists are sensitive, you know? And you see somebody who's been around here for 20 years, and he doesn't act like that or think like that or talk like that at all. He doesn't hold a reason. It's like two different animals in the same room with the same disease, but completely different. Because there's been some sort of transformation, some sort of psychic transformation of the personality of these people. So I'm sitting in this room with my sponsor, and I'm talking, and there's a moment of silence. There's like three guys at the table, and myself, four guys, and there's a moment of silence. We're sitting at a table like could be a bar table, except we're drinking coffee. And so what do you think I did? I didn't say, "Let me have a beer." This is what I did. I said, "That Charlie's a real jerk." I just started talking. I've been talking like that in bars all my life. I didn't do anything wrong. I've been talking about other people behind their back, crap about other people behind their back so much all my life. I don't think of anything like it. I don't think it's wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think there's anything bad with it. I don't think it has anything to do with alcoholism or my addiction or my problem. It's just the way I am. It's just the way I talk. It's just my mouth running. So I say, "I barely noticed. I suppose that my sponsor never said anything bad about anybody behind their back. I guess I never even noticed it. You know, I was so interested in my own thoughts. I guess I barely even noticed that the people that he was hanging around never said anything bad about other people behind their back. It was just, you know, it's just something you don't notice. You notice people aren't drinking. You don't notice they're not doing that. You know, and so I said, you know, that Charlie's a real jerk. You know, somebody ought to talk to him or something like that. And my sponsor turned to me and he said this. He said, "Russell," he says, "this is Alcoholics Anonymous." He says, "I don't know what fellowship you're in, but this is AA." And in AA, we don't talk about other people in a bad way behind their back. So unless you have something good to say about somebody, why don't you just shut up? And, you know, I was a sensitive guy, you know, and nobody ever talked to me that way. And, you know, well, of course, my mind, it was like Hiroshima, like a bomb went off. I mean, he insulted the great I am. For what? Where's the love? And I didn't even do anything in front of other people. He humiliated me. You know what it says in 12 and 12? The way we get a new perspective is by 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's how we don't get new perspectives by pats on the back. And you know what we do? You know the people that pat us on the back and treat us great because they think we're going to change, they wind up in Al-Anon sucking their thumbs, you know, saying, with their lives ruined. You know what I mean? You know why we get in here? We don't get in here because people are, you know, being nice. We get in here because our lives have been destroyed and we've been exploded. Because we've been humiliated, but something terrible. We get here because something terrible has happened to our lives and we wind up here and it's the worst thing that ever happened to us and becomes the best thing. Why would you think that that process ends at the door of Alcoholics Anonymous? If you were lucky enough to stay around here for the next 25, 30 years and grow, you're going to find, just like Dr. Thibault says, you know, there's going to be constant ego puncturing. You're going to be running up against constantly guys like my sponsor saying, why don't you just shut up? You're going to be constantly running into people that are pissing the hell out of you, pissing you off. The truth, you can't handle the truth. They're going to make you upset because they're going to confront you with ideas that say, no, we're not sick, you're the one who's sick. Why don't you shut up and look at yourself? You know, they're going to be confronting you that way because alcohol, don't kid yourself, you can't hurt an alcoholic. Don't worry about hurting alcoholics. We're the guys that smash into a car at 80 miles per hour, kill a family of four, and we walk away with a slight limp. You know what I mean? That's what we are. But when the whole world goes up in flames, there'll be two things left in the world, cockroaches and alcoholics. Nothing will hurt us. You cannot hurt an alcoholic. Don't worry about saying anything to an alcoholic that's going to hurt his feelings or anything like that. You know, we kill other people. There's an organization out there called Al-Anon. They got millions of people that go there. They're called codependents. And the only problem they have is they know us. That's it. They know us. That's it, you know. They go there. They introduce themselves. My name is so-and-so, you know, and I'm a codependent, and my husband's an alcoholic. That's their disease. Their disease is they know us. They met us, like in an elevator, and that's it. They're scarred for life. You know what I mean? So you remember that. When you start sponsoring people, and you've got 10 or 15 years, and you sponsor some new guy, and he's the most irresponsible, selfish, self-centered, spoiled brat you've ever met in your life who treats everybody like shit. And you remember that when he looks at you one day, when you've laid down your life for him and done everything for him, and tells you somehow that his life is horrible and his life is sad and it's all your fault, and then walks away, and you watch what happens when you actually sit there and start thinking, what did I do wrong? And start agonizing over trying to figure out why you did something wrong and what you did wrong, whether you owe him a mentor or not, and he ruins your whole day. And then you'll understand why there is such a thing called Al-Anon and how frickin' toxic we are. You know? And then you'll understand how serious this disease is and how we hurt other people. So my sponsor said that to me, and the point of this story is coming up. He said that to me, and I was pissed off at him, and I was mad at him, and I said, how can you say that to me? And of course, you know, I did what we do. I thought in my mind about blowing up his house and killing his wife and chopping up his dog and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But you want to know something? Somehow, I had one thing going for me. I didn't want to drink. You know, and I somehow connected my sponsor, this man, who I knew loved me and thought loved me, even though he hurt me, with the fact of not drinking. And I didn't want to drink more than anything else. So instead of quitting Alcoholics Anonymous, I came back and I did what alcoholics do best. I blended. You know, he told me, this is unacceptable in AA. This is unacceptable. We don't talk about other people behind their back. And so I stopped talking about other people behind their back, certainly in front of him, and actually got better in front of others. As a matter of fact, I got so good at it, you know, I'd hear two other people talking about other people behind their back. I'd say, hey, this is AA. We don't talk. I became the AA police force. You know what happened when I stopped talking? You know what you have to do in order to stop talking bad about other people behind their back? When you have a thought, like you want to say something, you know, to Christy, I want to tell her something about Danny, you know, about his, you know, bad about, I got to physically stop myself and say, no, I can't say that. I got to actually stop myself, restrain myself from talking, and then if I want to talk, I got to think of something good to say. And after a while, I'll still be thinking bad things, but I won't be saying bad things. And after a while, I found myself, I wasn't even thinking bad things. I was thinking good things, because anybody knows I like to talk, and if you can't talk bad about other people on their back, I'm left here trying to figure out what to talk about. So I'm talking good stuff or constructive stuff or thinking about good stuff to say. I'm like blending in with the crowd. Because I'm an alcoholic. I'm a leader. I'm not a I'm a follower. I'm not a leader. You know, if I'm in a country and western bar, I'm drinking beer. If I'm in a Manhattan swank lounge, I'm drinking martinis. If I'm in Key West, I'm drinking margaritas. I never get them mixed up. I never drink margaritas in a country and western bar. You know, I'm always going to do what other people are going to do to blend in. And that same thing that like to kill me out there actually saved my life here, because I wanted to be accepted by these people, so I stopped talking shit about other people behind their back. When I stopped talking badly about other people behind their back, I noticed within about a month or two, I started feeling better about myself. Now, if my sponsor had told me, you know, if you stop talking bad about people, bad stuff starts coming out of your mouth, you'll start feeling actually better about yourself, I would have pissed all over that and said, that's a bunch of crap. That doesn't make sense at all. Because my problem is you. But he didn't say that. He said, why don't you just shut up? He hurt my feelings and humiliated me. So what happened was I started complying. I started obeying. And as a result of starting to obey and comply, I started feeling better. And now 20 years later, I know why. Because I do it all the time. I know why 20 years later. But the point I'm trying to say is this. My enlightenment and my change started initially by being angry at my sponsor. Do you understand what I'm saying? My sponsor told me something that saved my life. That was probably one of the most important things I heard early on that saved my life. And my initial reaction was I wanted to kill him, kill his dog, kill his wife, and run away from Alcoholics Anonymous. So you need to understand something. More often than not, the things that you're going to hear in here that are going to save your life are not going to make you feel good. They're going to get you mad. They're going to get you angry. You're going to be mad at the person who said it. You understand what I'm saying? So watch out for that stuff. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to share a little bit about the 11th step as to what it means in my life today. I didn't come in like a believer. Now, as you guys know, many of you have followed my step series. You know, if anything, I'm like, I don't even think of these as a 12-step series. I basically like to talk about the third step for 12 weeks. You know, I'm a God guy, you know? I mean, I believe that. You know, there are two books, there are two ways of looking at Alcoholics Anonymous. One way, and I've talked about this in this group, is I call it the two-book theory. There are some people that think that the only thing this book talks about is not drinking. And the only thing AA is about is not drinking. You'll hear that in AA. You know what it said right here? It's a little thing we read. It sounds nice. It says, this is what it says. We offer help to anyone who has a drinking problem, sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Bullshit. I mean, when I say bullshit, I say it in a loving way. No, it's not bullshit. But that's the first book. That the only thing that this group is about, the only thing your sponsor is about, the only thing this thing is about, the only thing is not drinking. And you'll hear people say that, no matter if your ass is falling off, don't drink. Just put the plug in the jug, don't drink. The only thing we celebrate is just don't drink. The only thing, you could be a rapist, a murderer, a serial killer, if you got 15 years sobriety, come up here and pick up a medallion. It's all about not drinking. And you want to know something? It is all about not drinking. Isn't it? It's all about not drinking. You could have the worst day in the world and be horrible. If you haven't had a drink, you're a superstar. And it's true. There's a part of me believe that's absolutely true, and you better believe that. But there's another book in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there are some people that will always feel that way, and they think that's the only thing this is about, and that's it. And in one sense, it's a good thing. But you want to understand, this is like a spiritual kindergarten. Eventually, you really need to get to second grade. You really need to grow up eventually. And what you understand about these people that wrote this book about being rocked in the fourth dimension of existence, if this was only about alcohol, it wouldn't be a big book. It'd be a very, very slim book. Because what you realize when you start, and some people read this book and that's what they think they see. All they see is the jaywalker and the drinking and everything like that. And some people read this book and they realize that 85 to 90% of it is finding a relationship with God. That it's all about finding the relationship with God. They understand it so clear. They read the parts in the book. where it says it's so clear what this book is about. As a matter of fact, even when they're talking to the newcomer, the person that you're worried about chasing away, they talk about burning the idea into the person's mind. You know, that job or no job, he can get well anything as long as he does, as long as he stops drinking. It says right here, it says, in working with others, it says, one of the things it says is, just to read one part, but you can find many parts like this. It says, let's find it. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the process. I mean, that's what we're all about, isn't it, in here? You've been to discussion meetings? What's it about? My wife, my cousin, my mother, my father, my husband, my boss, my job, my this, my that. That's what it's about. And we have a book that says job or no job, wife or no wife. It says remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. And that's all we think about in here. That's all we want to talk about in here. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. See to it that his relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for us and countless others. And here's the deal. We look at these steps. It's all about God. It's all about pushing you towards a relationship with God, making a decision for God, clearing away the wreckage for God, you know. And if you read the books that they were actually reading before they wrote, the big book, which is basically the Holy Bible, 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, which they said was absolutely essential, you understand that the whole thing was about focusing on God. The central facts of our life today is that our Creator lives in our lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. And then we finally get to the 11th step, which says, okay, here's what we're doing. Now we finally got to the point where we have a relationship with God, and now we work on constantly increasing that relationship with God. And then we go out and we tell everybody about that. And that's what this book is all about. And there are some people that get to a point where they grow up, and they get a bit, and they see the rest of this book, and they say, it's not just about not drinking. Of course it's about not drinking. But the bottom line is, it's about living an incredible, glorious, unbelievable life and constantly focusing on him and focusing on God and having a relationship with God and making that the number one thing in your life, and all things will be added onto you. And focusing on that deal. And there are people in this organization that all they want to hear about is the not drinking club. And there are people in this, and that's all they read in here. And that's all they think is, and there are people that all they want to talk about is that they read the second book. And it's all about a relationship with God, and that's all they want to talk about. We all meet in the same room. And sometimes you'll hear the anger. You'll hear somebody, even though we have a book that says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion, we begin to see where religious people are right, where we encourage church membership and all sorts of stuff, anything that gets closer to God, and yet you'll hear somebody in here saying, well, I'm spiritual, not religious, this ain't about religion, this ain't about God, this is about not drinking and everything like that. And you'll hear, and if you're new, you'll say, well, I don't understand. You know, and you'll walk away from here thinking that even though God is all over the book and all over the steps and all over everything, you'll walk out of here thinking somehow God is bad and religion is bad and all this stuff is bad. When on the sixth step it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Any person who tries, a well-loved clergyman who is the greatest friend of AA has told us the test that anyone who tries repeatedly on getting rid of all his sins and his defects so that he can be growing the image and likeness of his Creator is a man, is somebody who is worthy to be called a man who's trying to do this the right way instead of a boy. And so everybody who reads this thing in a sense not graduates but gets to the point where they realize that this is about alcoholism, and this is about not only not drinking but not thinking crummy thoughts and saying crummy things and hurting people and feeling crummy and feeling like gossip and all this other stuff that goes with alcoholism, all these other symptoms, and wants to go further and go through the 11th step, it's so clear to them that what this book is about. And people that don't want to do this, and there are people that don't want to do this, they don't want to hear any of that crap at all, and we all meet in the same group. And somehow, some way, and I don't think it's because I'm smart, I really don't, I don't take any credit for that, somehow, some way, because of the people I come out with, really, it's a program of attraction rather than promotion. It's if you want the guys that I wanted, what they had, which is more than just physical sobriety, they read the Bible. I mean, I don't know how what to say. They read the Bible. Bible wasn't a dirty word. It wasn't a dirty word for Bill Wilson or Dr. Bob either. And 15 years sober, I joined the church, which is a pretty big thing for a Jewish kid. I started going to a Bible study. I'm a deacon in that church now. I started a ministry in that church. Does that mean you are called alive again? We meet every Friday night. It's 12 steps. We study the big book and we study the Bible. Now listen to me. Am I saying, if you hear me saying, this is what you need to do, you need to follow my path, then you're just hearing that because you've decided you want to hear that. You know, you're going to hear all sorts of options here. This is like a giant supermarket, you know? The next guy gets up here and says, you know, I hug trees and I worship bears. If that's what you want to do, you do that. If you want what he has, then you do that deal. You understand what I'm saying? But I'm telling you, this is my testimony. I got involved in this stuff slowly but surely. Listen, the first thing, I'm just like everybody else. The first time some guy suggested to me, have you ever been to a Bible study? You know what I say? And let me tell you something. You can read this book in the family afterwards. It encourages that stuff. It says it's not obligatory. It says every person has to decide for it. It encourages that stuff. So with all the guys that are putting down religion and putting down religious organizations and putting down the only thing in our society where people gather together, earth people gather together and talk about God, when you hear people in AA putting that stuff down, understand that that has absolutely nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous or recovery program, which says exactly the opposite. As Mavic says, most people encourage church membership and are involved in it. And it encourages it as long as we don't argue. And the only problem is the people that believe in God and do that stuff are scared crapless to talk about it. You understand what I'm saying? Because they're scared that some banana in the front row is going to get mad at them and put them down. You know what I mean? But I got 31 years. They're not going to chase me out of here, and there's not much they can do about me. So I'm going to tell you where it's at. So if there's anybody in here who after 10 years or 15 years or 5 days say, you know, I think I'm going to go back to church, it's perfectly all right. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't believe those people that say that stuff, that something's wrong with religion or any of that stuff. But believe the fact that you could find out your own deal. You don't have to do something just because somebody tells you to do it. That was my deal. And as soon as I started, you know, I got to a certain point spiritually. I'm going to end by this to sort of, you know, there's in the Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, there's this great line with Bill Dodson. He says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. I knew there was, and very often if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're hanging around here, and you're looking at the scenery and what's going on, and you're sober, but you know there's something more, there's an emptiness. I mean, it's not that you want to drink, but you know there's something more. You know there's something you haven't got. You hear it in the people, you hear it in other speakers, you just know you're missing something, there's more, and you're thirsty for more. And you get to a point in Alcoholics Anonymous that for you to get more, you're going to have to get past the anger and past the fear and sacrifice more and do something. You're either going to have to get a sponsor, or you're going to have to do the steps, or you're going to have to do something. You know, what used to happen is in Narcotics Anonymous, back when I came in about 30 years ago, back then, if you had 15 years, you were like on top of the iceberg because it was a newer fellowship. And we'd get people from NA who had 10 or 15 years. They'd sneak into AA because there was some sort of taboo against it just so they could find somebody with 20 or 25 years to get more. They wanted more. And, you know, when you hang around here for 15, 20 years and you want more, you know, and you look around the group and you're often the oldest guy in the group, you know, let me tell you something. There is something scary about being the guy with the longest time in the group. You know what I mean? All the time. And when you see the oldest, and you want more, and there's something more, and you know there's something more, you find yourself looking around. It says, we know but a little. God will always reveal to you more. We know there was one, just like Bill Wilson would look up to Sam Shoemaker. You know, and Ed Dalton, the Catholic priest, you know. You know, there's something more. And I, at 15 years, somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and I started going to church, studying the Bible and all that stuff. It's changed my life completely. Because now, when I read AA, it's put in such a context for me. It's almost like turning from black and white to Technicolor movie. Because I'm reading the stuff, I'm reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous and everything that comes along with it, but I'm reading it along with the literature that the first 100 people were reading at the time they wrote it. So when they say in the back of the book, and working for others, you've got to be the Good Samaritan every day, I know what the Good Samaritan means because I've read the parable of the Good Samaritan, I've studied it, and I picked it apart. And that's what they were doing when they wrote the book. And so it's what is this? This is, why do I even say this? Because this is part of what I do, which is formulated my 11-step deal. You know, where is it? Where is the 11-step deal? where I'm increasing my personal relationship with God. I mean, think about it for a second. If you're in this society, and you're in this world, you know, I used to play the game of the AA coffin. I know what the AA coffin is all about. First 5 years, 10 years, I'd go on AA cruises, you know, AA picnics, AA parties. You know, it's like AA is like a coffin. You just get in the coffin, you just sort of shut the door on it, and you just hang around. There's AA people, there's us, and there's them, the earth people. And we have the answer to all righteousness, and we know everything about God, and they don't really know anything. You know, they're the bad people. And you know what I found out is AA is really a launching pad into society. I have many, many, many friends that I love very much, and I get a lot of spiritual stuff out of it. You don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend, to be my spiritual advisor, for me to get something, you know, from you or listen to you or for me to help you. And I had many friends like that, and they had many friends like that, and I didn't lock myself in an AA coffin. Now, I understand when you first come in, you may be involved in that deal. But as you go on in this thing and you want to have a closer relationship with God, where else in this society, you tell me, where else in this society would you go to have a closer relationship with God and meet with people that talk about God than in church or a synagogue or something like that? Where else in this society do they have stuff like that? They're not all monsters. You know what I mean? You wouldn't, especially if you're raising kids and things like that. It's an incredible thing. And I'm not saying I'm the only one who talks about this stuff. And it's, you know something, it's in the book. It's permissible to talk about it. And I'm probably not the only one to talk about this, but I'll tell you something. I've been to thousands of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, thousands. I don't remember one where anybody talked about this stuff, even though it's in the, because people are scared to talk about this stuff. Man, I think it's a serious comment on AA that people are scared to talk about this stuff because somebody might put them down or get mad at them. It tells you something about the sickness of alcoholism. Doesn't tell you about the wellness of this organization. It tells you about the sickness, in a sense, of this organization. Don't get me wrong. That's alcoholism. Don't get me wrong. It's very important we don't get strident, get like bleeding deacons and saying you got to go to this church, you got to go to that church, or in any way tell people they got to do anything. But to not be able to share this stuff or share your testimony because you're worried about what somebody will think about you, you know, is the complete opposite of what this deal is all about. You know, and You want to do whatever you can to get closer to Him, to learn more about Him, more about your higher power, more about God, you know, so that you can have an incredible relationship so He becomes the centerpiece of your life. And the only I'm going to tell you one other thing, and then we're going to quit. We're a little bit over, but that's, you know, I used to actually drink, you know, when I was supposed to be home, and I'd go a little bit over. I've never seen alcoholics worry more about time than after they get sober, but... But I just want to tell you one thing. AA meetings are incredible and they're wonderful. But what you're going to find is, in what I found, I'm just going to tell you something. What I found is there, and they're wonderful because they're powerful, aren't they? There's a power in here. There seems like there's a power in here. But in many AA meetings, you want to understand something. There are people that are sort of struggling with this third step. And there's people studying with the God thing. They're struggling with that stuff. I just want to let you know something that I've found. And I'm not, and believe me, I go to more AA meetings now than I've ever gone to in my entire life. You know, I do AA and church and a lot of other things. There is nothing more powerful than me with a group of men, which I do often, or females working, meeting with a group of women, or even co-ed, whatever it is, that get together, where the entire group, Where the third step is nailed. Do you understand what I'm saying? Where there is no argument about God. There is nothing more powerful when that sucker is put to bed and you don't have to worry about what you say and what you think. And there's prayer meetings and meditation meetings where everybody, we may not feel exactly the same. You know, I'll tell you this right now, I'm a Presbyterian, whatever the hell that means, you know what I mean? And I can promise you right now, if you gave all the Presbyterians in the United States a questionnaire, you'd have so many different answers all over across the board, you know what I mean? Because it's all God as we understand Him. No matter what you call Him, whether you call Him Christ or whatever you call Him, it's all as you understand Him, your own personal relationship. But I got to tell you something. There's nothing more powerful than me with a group of people that are believers, that all believe that deal, and you're not going to get an argument or people yelling at you or calling you stupid or a big book thumper. So if you haven't heard it anywhere, you've heard it here today. And you can get, hey, listen, you know something? Here's the deal. You can get mad at that. You can get mad. I don't mind you getting mad. You know, my sponsor didn't mind when I got mad at him when he said to me, why don't you just shut up? That's what he said. He said, why didn't you just shut up? He told me something that hurt my feelings. He said, you can get mad at what I just said. You can do that deal. It don't mean it ain't true or healthy for you. So thank you very much. God bless you. Have a great day.